All right, welcome back to the deep dive. We always like to get into these kind of fascinating little wrinkles in the law. And today we're going to be looking at something that I think a lot of people can relate to, at least in principle. We're talking about property lines.
Yeah, you know those lines that on a map or, you know, in the county records, they seem so fixed and official, right? But what happens when in real life, you know, things get a little messier, a little fuzzier? Maybe there was a conversation between neighbors years ago, and now, you know, down the line, it's causing all sorts of legal headaches.
Yeah, like a handshake deal maybe, or just kind of an assumption about where the property line is. And then, oh, surprise, decades later, a surveyor comes in and says, nope, it's actually over there.
Exactly. And that's exactly the kind of situation we're going to be unpacking today with a real case from the Rhode Island Supreme Court, Delcesto v. Unknown Heirs of Lewis.
Catchy name. Very dramatic. But this case really dives into some core concepts of property law. Specifically, this idea of adverse possession, which we hear about sometimes, but maybe don't fully grasp, and also this doctrine of acquiescence, which I'll admit I wasn't super familiar with before digging into this.
And we've got all the court documents laid out here, some really interesting legal analysis too. So our goal today is to break all this down, see how these concepts played out in a real dispute, and maybe give you all some food for thought about your own property lines.
Right. Like, have you ever wondered about that old fence that's like slightly off from where your deed says it should be? Or maybe you've had a friendly chat with a neighbor about, trimming a tree that's kind of on both of your properties. This case gets into all that.
Absolutely. It really highlights how property law isn't just about abstract lines on a map, but about how people actually use and interact with their land, and sometimes how those interactions can bump up against the, you know, the official records.
So let's jump into the story. Rewind back to 1977. We're in Little Compton, Rhode Island, kind of a charming coastal town, I guess.
Right on the water, I
Okay,
assume.
so picture this. We've got these two neighbors, Mr. Wardell and Mr. Lewis. They have a conversation and decide to tweak their property line a bit.
Yeah, they basically say, hey, let's just adjust this boundary here.
And they mark this new line with, get this, granite stones, like old school boundary markers.
Oh.
So, seems pretty official, right?
On the surface, yeah, like a solid agreement.
Yeah.
Except, and this is where it gets tricky, this whole deal was never put in writing, like no formal agreement. And crucially, it was never officially recorded. They didn't change the deeds or anything.
Ah, so it's like that verbal agreement that everyone forgets about until it becomes a big problem.
Yeah, basically a ticking time bomb, legally speaking.
Okay, so now fast forward almost a decade. It's 1986. A new family, the Delfestos, they buy the lot that used to belong to Mr. Wardle.
Lot 20, yeah, they buy it, move in, probably see those granite stones and just assume, okay, that's our boundary, you know?
Yeah, right. Totally understandable. They start a garden, make the place their own. No clue about this old, off the books agreement from years back.
Right, and for a while it seems like everything's fine. No one's complaining that Delcestos are using the land up to those stones. But then the original Mr. Lewis, he decides to get a survey of his property, Lot 19.
And of course, the surveyor is working with the official records, the deeds, and the survey shows something's off. The Delcestos garden, which they've probably been tending for years at this point, it's actually encroaching on what, on paper, still belongs to Lewis.
Yep, those official lines don't care about the handshake deal or the granite stones.
Oh man, I can only imagine the shock for the Delcestos. Like, you've been happily gardening, thinking it's your land, and then
Yeah,
suddenly.
suddenly you've got a neighbor saying, "Get your tomatoes off my property."
Talk about a neighborly dispute in the making. So, what did the Delcestos do?
Well, they fight back, and their argument hinges on these two legal concepts we mentioned earlier, adverse possession and acquiescence. They're basically saying, "Hey, we've been using this land as our own openly and continuously, and our predecessor had an agreement with the previous owner, so we should have rights to it."
Okay, so let's break those concepts down, starting with adverse possession. It sounds kind of, I don't know, almost medieval, like you can just take someone's land if you hold on to it long enough.
It does have a bit of a historical ring to it, right? But it's still very much a part of modern law. So, adverse possession is basically a legal way for someone who isn't the legal owner of a property to actually gain ownership of it.
Wow, really? So how does that work? Can I just go camp out in Central Park for a few years and claim it as mine?
Not quite, ha ha. There are some very specific requirements, and they're designed to make sure it's fair that the true owner has a chance to object, and that it's not just about, you know, random squatting.
Okay, that makes sense. So what are the rules?
Well, in Rhode Island, you have to prove 6 things, and they all have to be true for a continuous period of 10 years. First is actual possession, meaning you're physically using the land in a way a typical owner would, like building something, gardening, or just occupying the space.
So I can't just, like, occasionally walk my dog on a piece of land and claim adverse possession?
No, it has to be more substantial than that. And it has to be open and notorious, meaning your use is visible and anyone could see it, including the actual owner. It can't be hidden.
So, no secret underground bunkers.
Not if you want to claim adverse possession. Haha. Third, the possession has to be hostile.
Hostile? Like I have to go and threaten my neighbor or something?
No, not like that. Legally, hostile just means you're using the land without the owner's permission and you're acting like you own it.
So even if I genuinely believe the land is mine, and I'm being perfectly polite while using it, it could still be considered hostile in a legal sense.
Exactly, because you're asserting a right to the property that goes against the actual owner's rights. The fourth requirement is continuous possession. This doesn't mean you have to be there 24/7, but it has to be consistent and uninterrupted for that whole 10-year period.
So, no taking a year off to backpack through Europe.
Probably not a good idea if you're trying to build a case for adverse possession. Fifth, the possession has to be exclusive, meaning you're the only one using it as an owner would. You can't be sharing it with the actual owner or the general public. And finally, in Rhode Island, the possession has to be under claim of right. This means you're acting as if you have a legal right to be there, even if you're mistaken about that right.
Okay, so lots of hoops to jump through. So, back to the Del Sesto case. Where did their argument for adverse possession fall apart?
Well, the Rhode Island Supreme Court said there were some key factual issues that needed more investigation. For example, who was really taking care of that disputed strip of land in the years leading up to the lawsuit? Was it consistently the Del Sestos or their predecessors?
Right, like were they mowing it, weeding it, that kind of thing?
Exactly. And did Mr. Lewis know about their use and never object? And maybe most importantly, was the Del Sestos' possession truly hostile and under a claim of right? Or could you argue that their initial use was somehow tied to that old unrecorded agreement, which might undermine the whole hostile element?
Because if they were relying on that agreement, even though it wasn't official, maybe they weren't really acting like they owned it independently of Lewis's rights.
Precisely. The Supreme Court said these were factual questions that needed to be explored at a trial. They couldn't just decide based on the documents alone.
That makes sense. They needed a clearer picture of what was really going on, who was doing what, and what everyone was thinking.
Right. A summary judgment, which is what the trial court did, is only really appropriate when there's no real dispute about the facts.
Okay, so that's adverse possession.
Mm-hmm.
What about this acquiescence thing? How is that different?
Acquiescence is also about property boundaries, but it's more focused on the idea that if two neighbors basically agree on a boundary line, even if it's not exactly what's on the deed, and they treat that line as the real boundary for a long enough time, then it becomes the legal boundary.
So it's not about one person taking possession against the owner's will, but more about both neighbors kind of silently agreeing through their actions on where the line is.
Exactly. It's like a practical boundary that they've established through their behavior. Usually there needs to be some kind of visible marker, like a fence or, in this case, those granite stones.
And both sides have to treat that marker as the real deal for at least 10 years in Rhode Island.
Exactly. So how did the Del Sestos use this argument? Well, they said that when Werbel and Lewis put those granite stones in back in 77, that was basically them setting a new boundary. And since then, Werdell and then the Del Sestos used the land up to those stones, and Mr. Lewis never objected.
So they're saying, look, he went along with it for all those years.
Right. But the big question, and this is what the Supreme Court pointed out, is whether the current Mr. Lewis, or actually it was Mrs. Lewis, who was representing the original Mr. Lewis's heirs, whether she also knew about and accepted that adjusted boundary for the required 10 years. She said she didn't.
So once again, it comes down to what each person knew and when they knew it.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court said this was another factual issue that needed a full trial to sort out. They couldn't just rely on the documents and arguments. They needed to hear from the people involved and figure out the whole story.
Okay, so lots of legal twists and turns in this case. But for our listeners out there, future lawyers, homeowners, anyone really, what are the big lessons to take away from all this?
Well, the most important one is probably the simplest. Always get it in writing. If you're making any kind of agreement about property, even with a neighbor you trust, put it in writing, get it signed, and file it officially.
Yeah, it seems obvious, but this whole case shows how much trouble you can avoid with that one simple step.
Right. And another big lesson is that even if you think you've been using a piece of land openly and continuously for years, proving adverse possession or acquiescence can be really tough, especially if you don't have clear documentation and consistent actions from both sides.
So relying on a handshake or a casual understanding can really backfire when it comes to property lines.
Absolutely. And finally, this case shows how important it is to have a chance to present all the facts and evidence at a trial, especially when there are disputes about what really happened and what people knew. Summary judgments are useful sometimes, but in complex cases like this, a full trial is often the only way to get to the truth.
It's amazing how a conversation about a property line from almost 50 years ago could lead to all this legal drama.
It really shows how long-lasting the consequences of property decisions can be. And it emphasizes that while it's great to have good relationships with your neighbors, clarity and formal agreements are crucial when it comes to land ownership.
So listeners, as you go about your lives, buying houses, chatting with neighbors, remember Del Sesto v. Lewis. And think about what you can do to make sure your own property boundaries are clear and undisputed both now and in the future. That's some food for thought as we wrap up this deep dive.